Okay, good morning. So I'll be talking about this Suzian twist. And since we have three lectures, I'll be starting with something very basic today. We'll be mainly interested in the following type of quantum field theory, I mean, topological quantum field theory. And we have seen many examples in this in these talks, in Matthew's talk and David's talk and so on. And so we are basically two main type of topological quantum field theories. One is about Schwarz type, and this is the type of quantum field theory, like topological, in the sense that there's no manifest dependence on the metric. And for example, like Chen-Sam's type theory, I mean, Chen-Sam theory is of this type. But somehow it depends on the metric in an implicit way. For example, you have seen in Filson's talk that if you do gauge fixing, you will see use the metric. And the other type is like a Witten type. I mean, roughly speaking, like if you build up the theory, like you're gonna use the metric, but if you do variation with respect to the metric, it's gonna be Q exact. And Q is some particular nilpotent operator that comes from supersymmetry. And actually, many examples, like for example, topological twist of supersymmetric field theories of this type. And that's gonna be the main focus of this talk. I'll be mainly explaining this example. In particular, I will try to explain some topological twist. There are many interesting examples. In the case, for example, like 2D, you have like A model and B model. I will spend some time to explaining these A B models, and to also like match the theme of this workshop, I will try to explain some these topological twist models in some B V formalism later. Also, like four-dimensional supernormals and so on. I will discuss this kind of example, interesting examples. No matter what, like in this kind of theory, I mean, there's interesting operator Q, and Q square equals zero, nilpotent, and this Q comes from one of the supercharges. I will discuss more carefully about the supersymmetry later, but this comes from one of the supersymmetry. And after topological twisting, I mean, this kind of observables states. And we'll be given by some kind of Q cohomologies, for example. You have seen this already. And more interestingly, like if this one comes from supersymmetry, there's additional operator whose commutator with Q give rise to translations. That's a very special feature of this twisting. So we'll find operator. Let's call this one G mu. That's part of the Suzy algebra, whose commutator with the Q gives rise to the translation around that coordinate. Again, this part of the supersymmetry, like in some cases, like this equation tell you like the theory is topological in the sense like if you move around a little bit or by translation a little bit around the point, some directions, it's gonna be Q exact. And you have seen this discussion in Matthew's talk and David's talk. And somehow, like this one tell you, like build up, tell you a way to build up interesting observables. For example, if you let G denote like this kind of one-form valued operator, this kind of relation tell you that if you look at the commutator with Q, it leads to the Durham differential. So this one is homotopy trivial. And you have seen this relation, for example, in Filson's talk, that once you have seen this one, you can use a Cochrane homotopy to realize that, for example, you look at a conjugation. You find Q plus D. And this relation lies behind many interesting constructions, like descendant observables, for example. In the one-dimensional case, quantum mechanical case, like Matthew described very carefully about this relation, about these descendant operators. But more precisely, I mean, let me just summarize. Like, suppose you have some kind of local operators. Then assume like this one is still Q closed. Then you can use this homotopy to write down something, e to the g applied to O. It's going to be like a form valued observables, like O plus O1 plus O2, and so on. Like this is a K-form valued observable. And which is like Q plus D closed. And this relation allows you to, construct supersymmetric observable in the way that if you integrate this kind of thing over some cycles, you just integrate it, this equation. Some closed cycle, it's going to be supersymmetric invariant. And that's one of the constructions called descendant equations you can apply in this story. Starting from local observables, you get some kind of superfields. I mean, one form, two form, essential. You can integrate over some different cycles to get interesting observables. Then you can use these observables to play some interesting game in the story. So that's one thing that's very, very interesting structure in this topological twisted, quantum field theory. And we'll be discussing some examples. I have already seen like quantum mechanical examples. Probably we're going to do some 2D examples, 4D examples later on. OK, that's the rough idea. So we're going to start with some very basic notion and to set up some terminologies for later applications. So yeah, I think this is a math talk. I'm going to start with some definitions to be more precise. We're going to be frequently discussing this super Lie algebra. I guess most people know this, but let me just write it down. It's like Z2 graded. Vector space. I have two pieces, for example, G0 plus G1. This guy is even. It's called even. This guy is called odd. And we're going to use this terminology all the way around. And together with the bracket, the super bracket, the super Lie bracket, satisfying the following properties. The first one is like this one is even. This means that if you take a bracket of two even stuff, it's even. Even with odd, it's odd. And odd with odd, it's even. Like G naught goes to G naught, G1 goes to G1. And G1 goes to G0. The very basic requirement. Then you require this one to like a bracket, like school symmetric in the gradient sense. So let me put it here. So this means that if you take a bracket of two element, if you switch the position up to sign by this cotosine rule, so here, like this is the gradient, this disparity. I'm going to use this notation for this parity all the time. And certainly, this graded Jacobi identity is satisfied. For example, xy bracket z equals like a bracket xyz minus cosine . Okay, that's the basic requirement. I guess most people are familiar with this notion. Okay, now again, the basic example. It's when like V is like a Z2 graded vector space. And then if you look at linear operators acting on this this vector space, then this is a super Lie algebra. Decompose into even part and odd part. And this guy is like a take even to even and odd to odd. And this guy take even to odd and odd to even. Look like it's like home, G naught, with like G1. It look like the matrix look like diagonal. And that's the odd part. Something similar, but it goes like this. But let me not write it down carefully. That's the basic example. And then this, the bracket is given by a gradient commutator of linear like compositions. So for example, I have two operators. This one is defined by S composed Y minus the cosine Y composed X. And this one defines a great super Lie algebra. And in this talk, I'll be always assuming this this relation. So whenever I talk about some operators, like in the super sense, in the super sense, the gradient sense, then whenever I write down commutator, I always mean this gradient commutator. Okay, this convention. Now let's talk about a little bit about more about these unitary representations for this super Lie algebra. Okay, so let's start with a super Hilbert space. Let's call a super Hilbert space. It's going to be like a super vector space, like zero gradient vector space with the inner product, like a Hermitian product with some special properties. Complex value, a complex vector space. H. So it's zero gradient, so like H equals like a H0 plus H1. And that's the even part, that's the odd part. And together with the Hermitian inner product, such that these two parts are orthogonal. I mean, this one has the inner product, this one is the inner product. If you compute the inner product of this even and odd, it's going to be zero. That's a very natural requirement. Then we need to understand a little bit about what do you mean by unitary representations and Hermitian conjugate and so on. That's going to be important in our later discussions on this supersymmetry. So let's set up these conventions first. Suppose I have a bounded linear operator. And we can define a joint in different sense. Like, first of all, you just let alpha star denote the usual adjoint for this Hilbert space. That's how you write down the adjoint, usually using this Hermitian product. Let's define another adjoint. Let's call this, I don't know whether this is a standard notation or terminology or not, but this is going to be a little bit different with some physics terminologies. So, but let's I find this one very convenient, so let me just describe it. We define the super adjoint. Again, let's call this one upper dagger by the following relation. So if this operator is even, it just be just usual adjoint. Let's say if upper is even. And if the operator is odd, let's take something different. Let's take minus 1 square root of negative 1 alpha, the usual adjoint, if alpha is odd. And this one turns out to be very convenient. But you have different ways to defining this. I mean, this is one possibility. Let's call this one like super Hermitian. Like, or just Hermitian sometimes, we just say, if, for example, the super adjoint equals alpha itself. That's gonna be the condition we're gonna set. Or you can just define the adjoint in the usual sense, but just define this super Hermitian in a different way. But it's one different, I mean, just turns out to be equivalent. Okay, that's the basic notations. Any questions so far? We're going to use this one all the time. I mean, when we discuss the unitary implications of the Susi algebra. But here are some basic properties. For example, if you define this super adjoint in this way, I mean, you apply it twice, it goes back. That's something you should expect. Another nice property about such definition is that if you take a joint for a composition of different operators, they respect the cosine rule. That's very convenient. So alpha beta, take a super adjoint equals minus 1 to the cosine beta gamma. That's the basic reason I choose this coefficient. But you can also insist some other conventions, like this one would be the adjoint of this two without its signs, and then you get the usual adjoint. You define this Hermitian property in a different way. And also, you can like say, for example, if you look at a commutator, like a graded commutator, such a cosine rule is still satisfied. So alpha beta, beta dagger, and alpha dagger. And if you switch them, I mean, go back, they become like minus alpha dagger and beta dagger. Okay, there's some very basic properties you can verify from this definition. It also will be mostly discussing some odd operators. Say Q, some kind of operator. And in the odd case, like in the graded case, like if you look at a commutator of Q with itself, by definition, this equals like twice Q squared. This may not be zero in general. If you put even stuff, it's always zero. But if you put odd stuff, it may not be zero. But on the other hand, in this like a super Hilbert space, this guy is always semi-positive. If you take a root of negative 1 with like Q dagger, there's something very similar to this scalar geometry, Q dagger Q. You observe that if you like throw into this definition, it equals like Q and his adjoint plus Q adjoint Q. And then we know this is always a semi-positive operator. And this is going to be very useful when we look at the implementations of Susi algebra in particular to get this BPS bound and so on. OK. Yes? Which one? H1?
I would think it would be skew
Hermitian,
but maybe it's just that if you
multiply. Which operator
do
you use?
I mean, the inner product of H1.
Yes. Oh, you can. This is really up to your convention. Like, you can. I define my Hermitian to be the usual Hermitian in a product and define this way, or you can. Yeah, and then you have a look at what kind of operators. It's sometimes like. If in your convention, like this one is not Hermitian, probably if you multiply by I, it's going to be Hermitian in your convention. Yeah. Well, but they're equivalent. I mean, it's up to your what you're used to. But okay. Now, yeah, probably this is a different for. Probably this is different from the usual physical convention, but you can switch to that convention as well. So the nice property about this super adjoint is that if you define your U group, your Lie algebra, unitary algebra by these operators. Satisfying the usual property, like say alpha adjoint equals minus alpha. That's how you define unitary algebra. And then you observe like this equation just tell you like this is a super Lie algebra. So any element like this, take a commutator, is still here. So you can see from this formula. So let's say a unitary representation of a super Lie algebra on say G on some super hyperspace is a super Lie algebra morphism. From this G to this unitary Lie algebra. Okay, that's going to be the definition. Yeah, it may differ from your definition by I, something like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's the basic notion. So now let's move on to discuss SUSE. And Chris described a little bit about this SUSE, this SUSE algebra, the representation, and so on, a little bit. So let's summarize a little bit about the structure and do some examples. Let's say super Poincaré algebra. Let me just remind you what's happening. So suppose we're going to be working with like a V, this deep dimensional vector space, real vector space, with some kind of quadratic form. But actually in practice, we're going to be mainly working on for two cases, like either it's Minkowski or Euclidean. Like R, D minus 1, and 1. And my convention for the signature is like a minus 1, plus 1, and so on. And or this Euclidean case. Going to be the usual one. And the signature is like O plus 1. OK, that's going to be the main examples. I'm going to describe in this SOV. So in this Minkowski case, this is like Lorentz group. And this one is like a usual special orthogonal group. And also, we have the spin group. I won't explain much about the spin group. Just, I guess Chris described this as well. So it's most of the cases like double cover, and in the Euclidean case, it's like a universal cover as well. Now, suppose we have a representation of the spin group, like say a spinner. Let's talk about a real representation. Of the spin group, real spinner. And suppose we have a spin equivalent, like a bilinear pairing, symmetric bilinear pairing. let's call this pairing like a gamma from S tends to S to E. Assume we have such a structure, which is like a compatible with the spin action. And then we can define a super Lie algebra. Let's put it here using this data as follows. So we can define, let's call this one like a just have two components, like an even part is V, and odd part is the spinner. And with the bracket relation given by this gamma, for example, so the Lie structure is like, suppose you divide element from V1 to from this guy and S1, and V2, dark sum S2, equals minus 2 gamma S1. S2. So this Chris described this relation as well in his talk. And roughly speaking, like this Lie bracket tell you like if you take a bracket of V with itself, it's gonna be 0. And V with S it's gonna be 0. And if you take a bracket of S with S, it lies in the element of V by this gamma map. Using this using this guy. Because like S is like odd, this pairing has to be symmetric. Okay, that's something very natural you can do. And somehow, you know, like whenever you have a Lie algebra, you want to get a Lie group, for example, by exponentiate the relation. And you do get a Lie group in this case. I mean, it's not hard to show. I mean, this is like it's like abelian part, I mean. This is like odd, so you can exponential odd things in a very easy way. So we can find like it generates a super Lie group. And let's call this one a product with the pi s. And this operator is the parity changing operator. I guess it appears several times in this talk, I guess, operator. So it's like this one is going to be odd. So it's a super Lie algebra. With the group law, like by exponentiating this bracket relation, spin equivalent group law, so for example, if you multiply elements like V1, S1, now you think about this element in the superspace, and then you do group multiplication, V2, S2, and using this bracket relation, is exponentiated, you find like this is going to be equal to like V1 plus V2 plus 1/2 bracket S1, S2, with like S1 plus S2. And that's the group law. And this group law will actually play a crucial role when we like construct supersymmetric field theories. Like this generates like interesting differential operators. We look at infinitesimal transformations. We'll come back to this group law later. We discuss like supersymmetric invariant action functional. Okay, that's a quick summary of what's happening in this Lie algebra. This is basically from this relation. Now, this is the formal definition. So this is like a super Poincaré group. Let's call this one Poincaré, super Poincaré group with respect to the spinner S. Aggressive is a different notation, right? I mean, it's an ISO, I forgot what kind of notation you use. In this case, it's like a V product. This is the super lead group, semi-product with the spin group. And corresponding to super Poincaré algebra, let's call this one little Poincaré. It's given by like this Lie algebra is given by the original Lie algebra. This is even, this is odd. And then this SOV is again even. And this is also called a Fourier algebra. This is going to be the main guy in this talk. Okay, any questions so far? And that's the main algebraic structure. Now some remarks, like you see, like from this the way you write down this super Lie bracket, you basically look at the symmetric tensors of the spinner and look at a component which you write like to be exactly the V, but it might have many different components. So here's one remark. And let me just summarize. Like, suppose you take a decomposition of this representation as a spinner. Like, in practice, you're going to find, like, for example, you're going to find a V, but you can find something more. Like, you have a bunch of trivial representations. Let's call this one a copies of R. And then you might find, like, a copies of some kind of exterior product of the representation. That's usually the case you're going to find. Then this piece, this wave piece, give rise to this Fourier algebra as mentioned. But you can use the other piece as well to write down some additional generators. So for example, and this copies of, let's say you have m copies of the trivial representation, you can write down like a central charge, like which might be non-trivial in practice. And then if you can also look at the other terms, like P term. This is like a central extension by some kind of P forms. And these forms can be coupled with like extended objects, like deep brain things and so on, to get some kind of eccentric extension. And actually, that's going to be the very interesting part, but I'll try to do some examples later. And finally, like you can also find some kind of symmetries, like automorphisms of this SUSY. So let's say some kind of outer automorphism. And somehow this is called R symmetry. Let's call this one like a GR. And when this R symmetry is non-trivial, like this is a game. Like sometimes you can use this R symmetry to twist your theory to get something like supersymmetric twisted stuff. And that's going to be playing a key role. But that's some game you can play. I mean, besides this such a simple Fourier algebra. Okay, any questions so far? Great. Okay, so now I want to discuss a little bit about the superspace. And that's the basic tool we're going to use to construct supersymmetric field theories. So let's denote, for example, like let's call this one this super Lie group like VS. And now we look at the functions on this superspace. Let's denote it by OVS. So that's the ordinary space. So this is given by like smooth functions on the vector space. But this guy is odd. So functions on this odd space are given by like an commuting variables. So tensor is like exterior product of the S2. That's what this function space look like. So we can choose like a linear coordinate. Let's say x mu and the theta alpha on this space. So this is a linear coordinate on this vector space, and this is the odd parameter on this spinner. So this is the usual coordinate, x mu, the commutes. But the theta, the anti-commutes. And any element, like functions on the superspace can be expanded, like in terms of, like for example, Taylor series in theta. So this is a finite sum. So for example, any kind of f, x and theta, it's going to be expanded in the following way. We're going to use this representation sometime later. And like theta I is like some particular product. I is the index I1, ik. Okay, that's what the functions on the superspace look like. And then we want to do some calculus on the superspace. The first thing we need is like a derivative, like derivations. So let's call this one super derivation. Probably let's call this one derivation on the superspace. It's called let's call this one super derivation. Then basically it's given by all of the linear map, let's say D. Satisfying like a gradient Leibniz rule. So D applied to F times G equals D applied to F times G plus a sine. And that's the usual way to define derivative, but in the super case, I mean, in this particular category. And that generates like that basically plays the role of like a vector field. Now, you can compute, for example, this is generated. It has a basis, for example, as usual, by this in terms of this coordinate. You have like a d of dx mu and d of d theta alpha, for example. They all act from the left, so give rise to this basis of derivations. And that's the usual story, I mean. But the only subtle thing is like this operator, like they somehow commutes in the gradient sense. So for example, d theta alpha, d theta beta, it equals minus something like that, and so on. And it's easy to check by definition. Okay. Now here's the game. To write down like the repetitions of the Sousse algebra, you can look at functions on this one and look at some kind of vector field generated by the group law. For example, like you think about this one as like a group, and you know like the Lie algebra can be viewed as a invariant vector field on this one. So this exact sum functions on the group. The same thing happened for this super case. So let's try to write it down. Now, this guy, the super Lie group, and you can write down two sets of vector fields. First one, you can write down, for example, like right invariant vector field. And the other one is like you can write down left invariant vector field. And without any calculation, you know these two sets of operators should commute, because acting from left and acting from right, they are commuting operations. And now it's an exercise to show that, for example, if you compute it, this right invariant vector field is generated by the following, like d x mu. This is what I mean by d x mu. Just call this one d theta alpha. It's generated by the two stuff. Like this is the first one. The second one is like a d alpha equals like the usual derivation for theta plus the correction term, like gamma mu alpha beta theta beta partial x mu. This generates like a right invariant vector field. Similarly, like left invariant vector field generated by something different, but very close, like dx mu. And let's call this one q alpha. It's like a d theta alpha minus gamma mu alpha beta theta beta dx mu. So gamma is the component of the gamma map in terms of coordinate, like a basis. So I didn't explain it, but this is like a gamma remembers this map. In terms of the basis. And so you know like these two operations, like they should commute, and you can check the commutator relations. For example, if you see like if you look at the commutator of Q, you find this combination. And this precisely says like this is basically the Susi algebra. And if you look at the other copy, like d alpha, d beta, this up to sine. And this kind of like super vector field will be very useful. I mean, we're gonna try to write down a field theory, like in terms of this like a super like a functions on superspace, and you see like these operators acting on functions, giving rise to like a representation of the Susi algebra. So that's gonna be what's happening next. So you see like this one form the representation of Susi algebra. So by this Q and dx mu. So we can, in principle, we can use this elements to write down some kind of action function, like a scalar field theory, like a gauge theory, and so on. And this one give rise to transformations, Susi transformation of the fields. Then you can try to like build up like a Susi invariant action functionals from this, again, something integrations on the superspace. Okay. Okay, any questions so far? That's the very basic structure. So before we move on to discuss like the supersymmetric, the construction of the supersymmetric field theories in different examples, like 2D and 4D and so on, let's discuss a little bit about some terminologies and some kinds of classifications like for the Susi, I mean, in different dimensions. So like let's focus on the Susi in the Minkowski case. And so there's a table, I just show you, but and actually Chris will discuss some classifications later. But So this is dimension, and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Let's put 10 here. So you look at irreducible, a real representation. You look at dimension, real dimension. And you can summarize the, I mean, this is a table, like, let me first write it down. For C2, quaternions, for C8, R16. So you see like a modulo, like 8, like 2, 6, and 10, so on, like there are two different real representations, like chiral, different chiral representations. The other one, so for real representation, they're a unique one. So the dimension is like 1, 1, 2, 4, 8, 8, 16, 16, and 16. That's going to be a particular component, like the number of supercharge if you count in the particular irreducible representation. Now, there's some terminology, like we use this one a lot in these discussions. Like, so in the case of like 2, 6, and 10, something like that, let's say, first, like, suppose D is not 2 and 6, modulo 8. And there's a unique irreducible real representation. There might be have like different, like a complex representation, but a unique real representation. Then suppose a spinner can be written down as like n copies of the irreducible one. And then we say like we have like n equals n sous C. But in a special case, like 2 and 6 and 10, for example, so we have two different chiral equivalent, inequivalent, like chiral representations. So the spinner you write down is something like usually written like n plus irreducible plus another copies of irreducible minus. Yes, that's for just a little bit lazy. Yeah. That's the most interesting case. But yeah. Then, like we say, like in this case, we say we have n equals n plus n minus sous C. That's for the terminology. Okay, we want to discuss some examples before we move on to discuss some like field theory cases about this Lie algebra. To just give you some feeling about what it looks like. So the first example. So Matthew discussed the one-dimensional case, so I'm going to skip one. We're going to mainly discuss 2 and 6, and hopefully something about 2 and 4. And so the first one, like a 2D case, and I will discuss more carefully next time about this, all these kind of models and topological cases. Like, but let's write down this algebra first. Now spin like SO 1, 1. This is very simple. This can be written down as follows, this matrix equals coach alpha sinh alpha sinh alpha coach alpha. And here, like alpha is some kind of real number, and J is the matrix, like 0, 1, 1, 0. And now you see like, as a group, like this one, is the same thing as a isomorphic to this group. Positive real numbers, like just forget about the J. As a multiplicative group, it's not like the product is given by multiplication. And now it's double cover. It's also easy, like this is the positive part. The double cover is given by all the real numbers except zero. Again, this is given by the product. Now you look at the representations. Now you see like there are two irreducible real representations in this case, and you can just see this representation from this this description. For example, you have this like this group. For these two different representations, like IR plus minus, these chi representations, they be given by like X is the element here. X as like a multiplying X or its inverse. So that's this gives rise to this representation. Now, then you see like from this description, these two representations are dual to each other. It's like if you multiply this one, this two is gonna be identity. So you see like these two guys, they are dual. And also like if you look at the symmetric tensors of this this representation, you can write it down in a very simple way. For example, sim2 of this R plus minus is part of the vector space V plus minus. So here, V plus minus is a decomposition representation of this group in terms of this like a left and right components. Okay, that's what's happening. And also you see like, now from this data, we can write down the corresponding Sousse algebra. So let Q plus minus be a basis R plus minus. And let's call it B plus minus. It's like a translation along these two different directions. Be a basis, represent a basis. V plus minus. Then we can write down this 2D N equals N plus N minus Sousse algebra. Just read off from this relation, like just write it down, like Q plus A, Q plus B commutator equals minus 2 delta AB D plus. And Q, the other copy, minus 2 delta AB D minus. And now this just becomes like, you know, by this relation, like Q, commutator of Q is something here. But then you see like if you look at the commutator of Q plus with Q minus, and you'll see in this relation, they're dual to each other, means like the tensor is gonna be trivial representation. It's gonna be scalar, so you have a central charge in principle. This central charge. And now in this convention for unitary representations, I require like a QA plus super dagger is this QA, and QA minus super dagger is the QA. And that's the unitarity property. I want to keep this table. Again, we will discuss this set of examples later, very carefully later in these two-dimensional cases, like A-B twisted models and so on. Again, in the exercise today, you will figure out like how to start from here to use the unitarity to figure out a BPS bound from this algebra. I won't discuss this one. I won't say much about it later, but this is going to be your exercise. Now, this is a two-dimensional case. Now, you can do some other examples, like let's say we're going to do this three-dimensional case, a four-dimensional case. I just write briefly what's happening and describe its relationship with like a two-dimensional case by this dimensional reduction, because that's going to be a very useful description later on when we construct field theories. So this three-dimensional case, let's look at like 2,1. The spin group in this case it turns out to be like SL2R. And the irreducible repetition is given by this fundamental repetition. And let's try to write down the corresponding Susi algebra. You will see like there's some relationship between this Susi algebra with this particular guy in two dimensions. To write it down like explicitly, like we need a little bit like spin analysis. So in this case, we can write down the corresponding representation in the following way. So the spin group acting on the space is like, say, let's identify what my space R. Let me put it here. So my space here, V, can be identified with like a symmetric 2x2 matrices. And this trick actually works for like high, like 2, 3, 4, and 6, and so on, 10, very similarly in terms of like using real numbers, complex numbers, quaternions, and so on. So symmetric 2x2 matrix. So for example, if you can write down the basis, like let's call this one 3 matrix. Sigma naught, 1, 0, 0, 1. Sigma 2 is like 1, 0, 0, minus 1. And sigma, let's call this one 0, 1, 2. It's like 0, 1, 1, 0. That's going to be the basis of all symmetric 2x2 matrices. So any element like, a vector x0, x1, x2 is the element of this vector space, going to be identified using this matrix to get an element here. Let's call this one AV. Let's call this one X or AX equals mu from 0 to 2, X mu, sigma mu. And you can write down in components very carefully. I mean, this is given by the matrix given by. And you see like x0 plus x1, this is like x2, x0 minus x1. The nice property about this matrix is that if you look at the determinant of this matrix, it produces exactly the norm. So the norm square equals minus the determinant of this matrix, which is given by minus x naught square plus x1 square plus x2 square. I can just compute it, the determinant, you can just see that. Okay. Now, I want to keep this part. It's 2D case. Which one? Determinant of this matrix. It should be x0 squared minus x1 squared minus x2 squared minus sine should be this guy. I hope it's correct. Okay. Any complaint? Okay. Now, the way, I mean, the spin action, it looks like this. I mean, the spin group, I said it's like a SL2R. X on V. And for example, F matrix, under this identification by like symmetric 2x2 matrix, you apply to a vector just to, well, it depends on your convention, but I write in this way. So M is a matrix in this SL2R. So this, you can also write, I mean, without inverse to the other convention, and this is equivalent. So this matrix, again, is symmetric, you can see. So that's why it maps this space to this space. It keeps symmetric matrix. So the axon is R3, R2,1. And also, like, because this matrix is like SL2, you look at the determinant of this guy. This one is 1 and 1, so it preserves the determinant. So this one preserves this norm. That's why it's like a, it's like a, it's a, like SL2,1. Now from this expression, you can sort of see like, now our spinner is given by the fundamental representation of this SL2R, and this is given by a conjugation, so you can write down a symmetric pairing in a very easy way. So we have a natural. Like spin equivalent map. By saying that so given the element of this spinner and with V, it goes to, for example, this number, AV, say X, AX, S. So this combination is basically like, this is a trivial representation. So this combination just tell you like, this map is like equivalent. And this is the thing, like you can use this one to write down the gamma map. So we find a gamma map from this expression. So this one goes to the dual of this vector space. This can be isomorphic to V as a representation. And you can write it down, the corresponding Susi algebra from this description. Now, oh gosh. Now we can get like, let me put it here. Probably gonna erase this table. So we get this n equals 1 3D Susi algebra. By this, you know, this pairing is nothing but given by intertranced by this kind of a sigma, this matrix. So we know that this Susi algebra is given by the following: Q alpha Q beta equals minus 2 sigma mu alpha beta d mu. So here, this sigma mu, I use this duality, so it's the eta mu mu of my original matrix that I wrote down here. And that's the 3D n equals 1 Susi algebra. Now again, with the unitarity condition, And this super convention is given by, again, this guy. This super Hermitian equals to this one. You can write them down explicitly, I mean. And you find, like, for example, a set of write off the data, let's say Q1, look at the sigma 1, this matrix. And this partition, I mean, you find like these two combinations, and I guess you find this number. I might get it wrong, it's what science, but roughly speaking, it's correct. If you look at Q1, Q2 equals like 2d2, and Q2 look like 2d0 plus 2d1. That's what it looks like explicitly. I mean, this is like a matrix component of the sigma here. And now you observe something interesting. You have a plus and minus, and this guy is something, it's a new operator. I mean, this one and this one coincide with what's happening in this 2D case. We have a D plus and D minus with a particular guy from this additional direction. So what's happening is that if, for example, in a case when you do like a dimensional reduction, you require something to be independent of the like this x2 direction, or it could create some kind of center charge. So if d2 is represented by, for example, a constant, and that's usually the case when you do dimensional reduction. And what you find is like a 2D, n equals 1,1, so see. And actually, that's going to be the trick we're going to discuss a little bit later when we do this dimensional reduction. So what's happening here is like a 3D, n equals 1. If you do dimensional reduction, you find like 2D n equals 1,1. And that's going to be a useful way to write down action functionals. Any question at this moment? I mean, this is a rather explicitly, just you can just see these algebras from these representations.
There is nothing special about
E2.
It's just the coordinates.
Yes, that's right. Particular representation, so you can do look at the different representations, you get different directions. I mean, that's not intrinsic. I mean, yeah, good point. Okay, now, next I want to discuss the case for like in four dimensions. Also, that's one of our main example later, but let me just say something about the general structure. I'm going to start with like a 4D n equals 1. let's say on this, in general, let's say, on R, 1. Now, again, the same trick. I mean, now previously you play with real numbers, now you play with complex numbers. You get this 4, and the same story, like the vector can be identified with the Hermitian. Two by two matrices. The same trick. And again, write down the basis, for example, this Pauli matrix. Again, this will give you a choice of the direction, but it can be different. 0, 1, 1, 0. That's all like a Hermitian symmetric 2x2 matrix. Sigma 2 equals like 0 minus I, and 0. And sigma 3 equals 1, 0, 0 minus 1. Again, an element, a vector, x0, x1, x2, x3, is going to be identified with a matrix AX, x mu, sigma mu. Again, if you write down in components, and you find the following, like it should be x0 plus x3, and x0 minus x3, and you have like a x2 minus I, x3, let's see, x1, probably x1, x2, and x1 plus I, x2. And again, if you compute the determinant of this matrix, it's produced the norm again, equals minus the determinant of this matrix. So you should find like x0 squared minus x3 cube square, x1 squared, x2 squared. I think that's correct. And then, and very similarly, like the action spin 3, 1, x on this vector, in the same, by the same formula, essentially by the same formula, I take a Hermitian conjugate. And M is an element of the SL to C. In this case, this spin group is isomorphic to SL to C. And then because, you see, like this, this expression, again, preserve the fact that this matrix is a Hermitian, 2 by 2, and also the determinant is preserved because it's SL to C. So it acts on this vector, preserving the inner product, and that's the way to get this spin action. Now I can write down, there's some step you can do, but more precisely, I mean, if you do some work, you can write down this Fourier algebra very broadly explicitly in 4D. Again, we're going to use this expression later, but let me just lay it down here. So I try to avoid the discussion about this Trotsch-Koch operator, but in this case, rather explicitly, it's given by this algebra, this matrix, and the d mu. This essentially looks like the same formula, and then you can write it down carefully. I mean, roughly speaking, you see this Pauli matrix. I have 4 copies. I think what you find is the following. Q1, Q2, 2 bar equals minus 2, D0, D3. And Q1, Q2 bar minus equals minus 2, D1 minus I, D2, and so on. Q2, Q1 bar equals. And this is nothing but this matrix component of this kind of Pauli matrix, I mean, basically. Again, you can observe the relationship between this one and this guy. I mean, sort of imagine like if you have one-dimensional, like do one-dimensional reduction, the spin group is reduced to a lower spin group plus something else. And you can check now that probably let me. I'm going to keep this part. And then from this relation, you can check, I mean, the dimensional reduction. Along the last direction, I mean, to the dimension, like this is not intrinsic, but it depends on your particular presentation. But in this case, you find like these 2 copies. like a real, this is your exercise as well. Real go to. And the other copy is like a imaginary part. Q1, Q2. Gives basically two sets of 3D n equals 1 Susi algebra. So from here, you also find the relation, like this stuff from four dimension. You do like dimensional reduction. You get like 3D n equals 1. Equals 2. Two copies. And you can keep doing like go to like lower dimension or like a two dimension, get the n equals 2, 2, and so on. And that's going to be a useful way to write down to help us to find the relationship between different supersymmetric field theories. Okay, so let me see the time. I think that's pretty much what I want to say today. So next time we're going to describe the constructions of like a two-dimensional twist, like supersymmetric H theory, topological model and supersymmetric topological model, and do the twisting for the A model and B model and discuss the B waveformism. And possibly next time about then a little bit about this 4-dimensional case. Okay, thank you.
Are there any questions?
I hope it's based.
In order to talk about real imaginary points, you need to say how dagger
works. Ah, yes, this dagger is what it looks like. The dagger goes to bar here, so yeah. And it's super dagger in math. Actually, probably physics convention is like the additional square root of I here somewhere. So, but it's equivalent.
Can you just remind us what the indices alpha and beta?
Alpha beta is the I didn't say this. What is the spinner here? Spinner is given by this a fundamental representation of SL2C. So it's two components, and that's two components of the fundamental representation of the matrix. So it's alpha equals 1, 2, for example. And this relation just does something read off from this expression, basically. But it can be more intrinsic, but I want to have something very concrete you can play with later.
I also think we're talking to see anyone else's hand up. So in general, when you do dimensional reduction, do all the supercharges survive?
Yeah, I mean, you do some conditions, but also it can happen that this guy has a non-trivial central charge that may appear as well. So depending on the condition. Yeah.